Good afternoon. My name is Gonzalo Arce. This work was mainly developed by my student Daniel Otero, and it explores the construction of random matrices in compressive sensing. In compressive sensing, the overwhelming majority of the work has dealt with constructing matrices that are sub-Gaussian. So these are matrices that are Gaussian or Bernoulli or binary in some fashion, or partial Fourier matrices and the like. So the question we explore here is, thank you. So the question we explore here is what happens if the matrices that we use in compressive sensing are not sub-Gaussian. And there are some interesting statistical and geometrical characteristics that emerge out of those properties. So the first point we will motivate, that we will summarize those characteristics when these matrices are not sub-Gaussian. We will talk about stable random processes that are one class of variables that are not sub-Gaussian, and we will go over some RIP equivalent characteristics of these compressive measurements and show some computer simulations. So in compressive sensing, the fundamental property, the RIP, the RIP, shows how this dimensionality reduction that is achieved when you do the compression preserves information in spaces, right? And several people in this session have talked about that, the information preserving in the different spaces. In typical sub-Gaussian measurements, you have this isometry. You have the isometry that you go from the L2 space, and when you do the projections, you have this isometry or distance preservation on L2 space as well. But R has to be Gaussian or something like that. Chartrand and a colleague of his generalized this idea to say, okay, well, how about if I look at this isometry still in the L2 base, but I could do regularization in an LP, and you could get more sparse characteristics in the system. So using this same idea, what we will do is we will generalize it to apply to a compressive scenario where R is no longer sub-Gaussian, and in fact can be very impulsive or arbitrarily tunable impulsive characteristics. And we will show that the isometry that is preserved here is in not an L2 space, it's in an LP space, LP metric, going to an L alpha metric, and these are very distinctly related.
Is P less than 1?
P will be less than alpha over 2. That's a characteristic. So, and 2 can go from 1 to 2. In alpha stable distributions, alpha determines the level of the degree of not Gaussianity, if you will, 2 meaning Gaussian, and the lower the alpha, the more impulsive characteristics you will have. And of course, the RIP will also give you a probability of reconstruction and also the number of measurements that you may need.
I had a question. If alpha is less than 1, it's not a metric.
Yes. Well, it's a distance. Right. We're not talking about norms.
Okay.
Now, this is the geometric interpretation. In compressive sensing, typically, you have that the L2 is, if you have the L2 distance in the original space, you are going to preserve this L2 distance in the projective space. In dimensionality reduction literature, there's a lot of interest in doing the dimensionality reduction in norms that are not L2, maybe the L1, that may be more attractive for the application. Right? For instance, the image processing literature, it's well known that the L2 norms or distances are very poor, and you may want to go to other norms. So that was the motivation here. You know, can we get other L2 distance preservation in this compressive sensing? So in this case, for instance, we're talking about the L1 norm here, how it may be preserved in the projections on this LP norm. And associated with this dimensionality reduction, then you will have the RIP or the restricted isometry property under reconstruction. So you would like to get the reconstruction back. So the result that we will look at today is basically this result here, which is in essence very similar to the traditional RIP, where instead of the L2 norms here, we're going to have the LP norms. So what are the things that this will gain if you use these projections rather than that are not sub Gaussian? One is that you will preserve distances in spaces that are not L2. But there's also other properties that are interesting. We know when you process data with norms that are lower than L2, that the processing is a lot more robust. So that sort of addresses one of the talks that was given here by Carrillo and Barner, that if you have noise in your observations that are not Gaussian, then your reconstruction is going to be much more robust than what you would get with Gaussian projections. You use LP, therefore you preserve more of the sparsity of the reconstruction. And as I said, the distance preservation is in a different space. Okay, so in alpha stable, when we talk about sub-Gaussian projections, what is key is that if you're generating a random matrix, rather than having the entries being out of a Gaussian distribution, they're going to be an alpha stable distribution, which have tails heavier than Gaussian. So for instance here, as you change the parameter, alpha equal to 2 is this black curve, which is the Gaussian. If you have alpha equal to 1.5, there's going to be this blue curve and so on. So as you lower the alpha, you're going to have heavier and heavier tails to generate the projection matrix. The characteristic function of all stable distributions have this shape. It's a curious class of density functions, distributions. The characteristic function is very well specified. It's very compact, very nice, but the distributions are not. It's a very interesting class. Here, the alpha, if you put alpha equal to 2, that's a characteristic function of a Gaussian. So in general, this is the easiest way to characterize the alpha stable distribution. Another thing that's very interesting with the stable distributions, it has a stability property. Much like the Gaussian has a generalized Gaussian central limit theorem, stable distributions have a generalized central limit theorem, or stable law, if you will. And it's interesting because if you have let this R be a stable distribution, symmetric stable distribution with some specify alpha and specify dispersion, so you don't have variance here, you have dispersion. If you add a bunch of them, the output will also be stable of the same parameter alpha, but the dispersion will be sort of like an LP metric of the dispersions, right? So, for instance, if all of these have dispersion 1, and if you add all of this, then the output, the y, which is the sum of all of these, will be the L alpha norm of the data. So the dispersion captures the alpha norm. It is an example where you have Cauchy data. If you do the Cauchy random projections, then the output will be the Cauchy with the L1 dispersion. It's just a special case of the stable distribution. Okay, so when you talk about stable distributions, since they're heavy tails, you can't use second order moments or second order statistics because they're very heavy tails. And the means and variances are not very well defined. So what you have to use is you have to use fractional moments. So if x is a stable distribution, then the expected value of x to the p, absolute value of x to the p, has if you compute the moments, then this will be related to the dispersion to the p. And therefore, if you have the LP norm of this, this is the sum of a lot of these terms, then the expected value of that LP, then there will be another constant, the term, that's a variable of P and alpha, and also the dispersion of the variable. So this can be used in order to do the analysis that we need for the RIP that we will go into. So this is the theorem that we're gonna look for is we're gonna have a random matrix that is, again, much like you generate compressive random matrices that are Gaussian. We're gonna be generating matrices that are alpha stable, IID, with alpha between 1 and 2. And you will show that if you have K, the dimension of this matrix, be of certain dimension, which is S log N over S, very similar to the traditional RIP, where S is the sparsity, then this distance characterization will be preserved, and with a given probability. Okay, and to do that, to prove that, we will use this very similar steps as we do in the traditional RIP construction, except that we will be using these other different fractional moments. And the procedure is, of course, to look at the probabilistic approach that for a fixed x in that is sparse, that the RIP will hold. Then we will look at that the RIP is achieved for any x in our S, and then for any submatrix of the R. So it's very similar to the other procedures on the traditional RIP derivation. So we will just sketch how we do this. So the first lemma tells us that if you have the index of S being the sparsity, and we're looking at this be a submatrix of K by A's of this projection matrix, then this will hold. This will hold where these are some constants that we will derive, and this will hold with a given probability. And the proof of that is related to the fractional moments we just discussed a minute ago, where you have y is equal to the projection matrix. Each of the entries of this y will be the linear combination of the x's with the stable components. Therefore, this random variable y, each of the entries of the projection, will be alpha stable with a zero mean, but dispersion of the alpha norm. Right? The LPL of y then is denoted by this sum, where you have each of these is given there. So this is just the sum of these elements of the y, right, up to the pth level. And you can then take the expected value of the projection, which is just, again, it's these are the pth, the alpha norm of the vector. So what we have then is we have the expected value, and then we have the variance, and then the variance you can similarly derive there. So you have the mean and you have the variance, and you're trying to get this bound in order to detect the probabilities that the distances will be preserved within that distance. Then if you approximate the distribution of this LP norm by an inverse Gaussian, then you will have a Chernoff bound that you can then relate how likely are these distances to be contained in a given ball, if you will. And that will be a function of this parameter eta, the parameter, the distribution of these mu and sigma that we just reviewed in the previous slide. And the Chernoff band provides us that probability, which will be a function of the K, right? That will tell you for a given probability that I'm within the ball, I need so many projections on the compressive sensing measurements. So we then generalize that not just for a given X, but for any arbitrary X that preserves that LP norm. And that just changes this probability. You know, you just have to be a little more tight on the on the distances, and then for any submatrix, you just change also the constants there. And then to prove the theorem, then you just have to manipulate the constants to put it into this form, which is what we're looking for. But and at the same time, that gives us the minimum number of measurements to attain the rip, which is again a function that is S log N over S. So this is an example of what happens if you do these projections. So you have the dimensionality reduction. You have these matrices that satisfy this rip. And then you can do the reconstruction. Not only just dimensionality reduction, but you want to do the reconstruction. But when you do the reconstruction, you're projecting with this not some Gaussian, sub-Gaussian entries, and therefore you cannot use traditional compressive sensing algorithms like the L2, L1, or methods that rely on L2 distances. For instance, the greedy algorithms, traditional greedy algorithms, will fail because of the impulsive nature of the measurements. So in this example, we're going to be getting compressive measurements. Y, where R are the alpha stable projections with alpha equal to 1.2. Well, the noise is 1.2, and then you have, this is the density function. The number of measurements is 400. K is the number of measurements. S is the sparsity, and this is a reconstruction algorithms that are not developed in this paper, but in a different paper that uses not L2 data fitting terms, but uses a LL or Lorentzian Lorentzian based metrics to do the data fitting. Then you can see that the data that is the original are the circles, the blue circles. Then the recovered data is well preserved. If you use the L1 LS, you will recover the sparsity terms, but you will have a lot of spurious terms. And then you can do that, and you can test the number of measurements that you require. And again, for this method, we had a theoretical K that you needed to fit, and in this reconstruction, you were able to do the inversion within the bounds that the theory tells you. So, in summary, what if you use if you don't use sub-Gaussian measurements, we explore that you can get these isometries or these distances in not an L2 but in other norms or. And at the same time, you will find that they're more robust. You have a lot more robustness against noise that are impulsive. And also, it gives you the sparsity-inducing norms that you want for the reconstruction. Any questions? You're using the Chernoff bounds on the fractional terms. So you're doing the variables to the p. So you can use approximations, not Gaussian, not very heavy tail, but you can do inverse Gaussian or other Chernoff bounds on other distributions. They're well behaved. Sure, because you're using those on the LP type variables.
But P is less than 1.
P is, yes,
so
yes.
So in that context, I was asking whether these moment generating functions are
valid. Yeah, yes.
I think I just missed something. So the last part, you were the slide before, you were comparing L0 minus. Where you are comparing with an alpha.
Yeah, what happens is you generate your matrices using a stable distribution, right? So you have some that is not Gaussian. You generate the projections where you're going to get a vector of measurements. But these measurements are linear combination alpha stable distribution, so they're not sub-Gaussian. They're not Gaussian, right? So the inverse algorithms cannot use traditional L2 data fitting terms with the regular eyes. So you have to use norms that are robust. You have to use norms, perhaps like the ones they were mentioned earlier, that are L1 or even more robust, depending on your alpha. So in this case, this illustrates that if you use norms of data fitting that are more robust, like the LL, the Lorentzian that was.
Okay, for example, for this case, if you look at p equals 0.6, instead of L0 and L1, L0.6.
Yes. You will get a good result if you do that. Yes. The algorithm that we use is a Lorentzian type, but we could have derived an algorithm that uses an LP with P less than what you.
So, I can imagine that L1 wouldn't give you a good result because, first of all, it's not really sparse. Real sparsely norm is the L0.
Yeah. Well, the L1 is the approximation for the L0,
so
right?
So, what I wonder is,
We haven't really run that experiment because there's two terms, right? There's the data fitting term, which is the one that you should put as 0.6, and then there's the sparsity term, which could be the L0 or even the L1, right? So if you came up with an algorithm that was the data fitting norm of 0.6 and used the L0, that would be a very good algorithm, or an L0.6 with an L1, maybe even do fine. But here, this algorithm that we tried was one that was somewhat tunable, that we could go down to that as was presented with the Lorentzian norm. And this here shows you that if you do the L2 data fitting, you're gonna do poor. You're gonna get a lot of spurious results because of the structure of that projection, which is not sub-Gaussian. Yes, that's a good question. What we explored were the statistical characteristics of such matrices. How you generate them and how you use them in practice, that's something to be explored. Certainly, you could try, for instance, Gaussian mixtures are easy. A very good approximation of not sub-Gaussian matrices. But in general, to be in practice, you would have to come up. That's an open question. Okay, thank you.